The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily express those of KCNR Radio and its sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. Readers and listeners are advised that neither KCNR Radio nor its owners and agents shall be held liable for the content of this program.
Welcome to We're a Little Behind. I'm Chris Gomez.
And I'm Jen Gomez. Welcome to another week.
Yeah.
Hey, we're here.
We made it. And you know what? We stuck to what we said.
That's right. Look at us falling through.
That corner you painted us into, we got out of it.
You know, sometimes you have to make promises in order to force yourself to do things.
And that is exactly what we did.
That's right. So, what I like about today's episode and the movies we're going to talk about is it kind of dovetails with what we've mentioned last week about a new segment we're going to be doing, which is On Second Thought, which is where we watch movies we've already watched to see if we have changed opinions on them.
Right.
And the movies that we watched this week, I remember really liking. And then I watched them again. I'm like, why did I like these again? They weren't as good this time.
Yeah, two out of the three for me.
The third one is different. We'll get there.
Yeah.
But the first two, definitely, I remember thinking were really good. And then upon rewatching, I'm like, wait, what was it that I liked about these again? I can't remember.
Well, I was discussing the first one earlier with Lauren at work, and she said that it's probably that I didn't like the first one because I'm not an angsty teenager.
Well, I was never an angsty teenager.
But you were close to being a teenager time that the movie came out.
True. All right, so let's dive right in. So the first movie we're talking about is Donnie Darko.
Yes.
Which came out in 2001. Uh-huh. And it stars...
So see, you were 19.
I was 19. But I don't think I saw it when it came out.
No.
I think I had waited a couple of years because, as we all know, I get a little behind.
Okay.
I don't really remember when I saw it, but I was closer to being a teenager then than I am now. So
right.
That's without question. But yeah, so 2001 movie starring Jake Gyllenhaal and his sister playing his actual sister.
Yeah.
Which was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a sci-fi drama thriller is what IMDb calls it. And yeah, I guess so.
Sure.
So it stars Gyllenhaal as Donnie Darko, the title character, and he has some mental problems. He's on medication for some mental disorders.
Yeah.
And he starts seeing it's kind of a darker Harvey, because he sees a gigantic, scary rabbit following him around and telling him things. And so at the beginning of the movie, this rabbit thing tells him it's going to be so many days, hours, minutes, seconds.
Until 28 days and then like five hours and so forth.
Until the end of the world.
Right.
Until the world ends. And so it's kind of Donnie's journey through figuring out what all this means. And I don't know. I remember the ending of the movie being...
I like the rabbit's voice.
The rabbit's voice is really cool. Yeah. It was super modulated and mm-hmm. creepy. And it was actually played by the kid who was the oldest sibling in Independence Day.
Oh, really?
The oldest of Randy Quaid's stepsons.
Oh, okay.
So, fun fact.
Fun fact.
But, it was kind of boring.
There's just so many people in this movie, too.
Oh, like, yeah. It's a great cast.
Yeah.
But the storyline, it feels like it's going to lead up to this, like, amazing climax.
Yeah, not only the Gyllenhaals in it, but you've got Drew Barrymore's in it.
Well, she produced it.
Right.
This was one of the first films released by her production company.
Oh. And then it also has...
Noah Wiley.
Seth Rogen.
In his very first film.
Which is first... First on-screen line was, I like your boobs.
Yes. Which, I mean, makes sense.
You got to start somewhere.
I mean,
if you're Seth Rogen, that's the place to go.
It fits. It fits.
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing cast. But just, I don't know. I don't think that it had a very good payoff.
No, not at all. I like time travel movies.
Oh, Patrick Swayze, too, plays a weird... self-help
Tony Robbins-like
pedophile character.
Yeah.
And so the whole town loves him, but then he's taken down at the end.
Like Jared Fogle from Subway.
Yes.
Pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I like time travel movies. This is an exception.
Yeah. So again, this movie came out in 2001. So spoilers. So mm-hmm. if you haven't seen the movie and you don't want to be spoiled, then you know you've been warned. But so the movie, towards the beginning of the movie, a jet engine falls from the sky and lands on his house, and lands on his bedroom, but he's not there. And so everybody...
Because the rabbit came and got him.
Right. Everybody's fine. The rabbit came and got him. And then he says, oh, it's going to be 28 days, blah, 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 till the world ends. And then it turns out that at that point, his mom and his little sister are flying back home from Hollywood because she was in a dance troupe and they were invited to be Star Search.
Mm-hmm.
And they were on their way home on a red-eye flight, and that flight starts to break apart. And so the engine actually falls from their flight onto his room.
Yeah, it, like, travels through time.
And so he sacrifices himself?
So the plane crash happens, the plane thing happens 28 days from the point where he finds out that the world is going to end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because time travel happens. And this wormhole opens up, the engine that gets caught in the wormhole thing and goes back in time and lands on their house. The first time he goes there because the rabbit got him. This time, and then at the end, it turns out that he went backwards, and then he was in his bed when it happened, so then he was there. So obviously, yeah, I guess he sacrificed himself because
he died.
Right.
And so now his sister wouldn't necessarily be going on Star Search.
Right.
If she's mourning her brother. And so the last 28 days, everything that happened then no longer happens.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it has potential. I think there's something there, but I don't know. It just didn't. It does, however, have a very good use of Mad World.
Well, yeah, that's just a good song.
It's a very good song.
It turns out that not only is Tears for Fears a good band, but their stuff is usually covered even just as good or better than their original stuff.
Because the best thing about this movie is the soundtrack.
Yeah.
It's got a great soundtrack. It's got a lot of covers, a lot of, you know, remixes of songs that are just used beautifully. And I think maybe that's why I remember liking the end of this movie so much, mm-hmm. is that that's when they use Mad World, and they use pretty much the entire song is used during this whole kind of when the plane crashes and everything. And so they play the song in its completion. And that song pulls out very strong emotion. It's a very emotional song, and it's a beautiful, haunting sound. And so I think I was remembering more the feeling I had with that song than I was the actual movie.
Yeah, it doesn't help that the guy who wrote and directed it was on drugs at the time that he wrote the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very apparent.
It is. It's a little weird. And according to IMDb, Jake Gyllenhaal and Seth Rogen, after the movie at their rap party, both discussed it and came to the conclusion that neither one of them knew what the movie was about. And that's not a good sign.
No, that's
if your main character, his character name is the title of the movie, if he doesn't know what your movie is about,
you've got problems.
You've got some problems.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But this is a cult classic. People love this movie. It is on several lists of movies you should see before you die type thing. Like, it's been ranked really high. People love it. Yeah. I'm not making that up. That is real. That's a true fact about Donnie Darko.
I don't know. I was like, I've seen it, and I don't know if I necessarily need to do that again.
Yeah, I don't think so. Like, I don't know. It just, meh.
I did like the discussion about Smurfs in there, though.
There is a great discussion about Smurfs. And they actually had to get permission to talk about them. And so Jake's character, Donnie, talks about misconceptions with Smurf reproduction.
Sure, sure.
And the company who owns Smurfs allowed them to use that conversation in the movie because it was accurate.
Yeah. Because he's having a conversation with two friends, and they're talking about how Smurfette is pretty much the only female, and that's how they're going to have to reproduce, whatever. And Donnie says, no, the Smurfs are asexual. They're, like, they're not a sexual being, and there is no reproduction. They just kind of, like, I don't know, they, like, spawn or something.
Right, and and his friends were also saying that Papa Smurf made Smurfette, and he's like, no, Gargamel made her as a spy, and then they turned her with their kindness. It was a really cool conversation.
Yeah.
About Smurfs.
Well, and it's weird because you forget, even watching it, that it takes place in 1988.
Yes.
Because Dukakis and Bush were the presidential nominees.
And Patrick Swayze wore his own clothes from the 80s.
Nice.
Yeah, his character was very interesting.
It makes you miss Patrick Swayze just more. Like,
oh, yeah.
Even as a character like that, you still miss him.
Oh, yeah, because He is not a likable character. Like, even when the whole town is in love with him, you just get a creeper feeling from him. And so it's hard to not like Patrick Swayze.
Right.
And I think that's why he was really good in that role.
He's one of the few people that no matter what he's playing, he's simultaneously both. Like, if he's playing a good character, you totally buy it. But if he's playing a bad character, you are like, ah, that character's bad. But it's Patrick Swayze,
but
so
Patrick
he's good.
Swayze.
And I think another person is like that, who really doesn't play villains very much ever, or bad characters, you know, bad people or whatever, is Tom Hanks.
Oh, yeah. I think the one movie he's a bad guy, he actually gets redeemed at the end. And so it's like, well, that's...
Road to Perdition, where he's a hitman for the mob.
Yeah.
But then he grows a conscience, and you're like...
But there's another movie he's a bad guy. I think it's like...
Oh, the new one that we never saw.
Oh, no, we still need to see that one. So
yeah.
our theory is on hold until we see The Circle, which I'm down for because it's got Emma Watson in it.
And
I love me some Emma Watson.
And Tom Hanks.
And Tom Hanks plays
like an evil Bill Gates.
Yes.
Or Bill Gates. I don't know.
See, I was going to go with an evil Steve Jobs or Steve Jobs.
Oh, okay, yeah. See, yeah, but you use Macs more than I do.
I use
Windows, so I obviously go with Steve. I go with Bill Gates.
But,
you go with.
But there's also a lot more people who say that Steve was not a nice man.
True, and Bill Gates does a lot of good work.
I've never really heard a lot of people speak bad about Bill.
I am not. Yeah, I'm not claiming a lot about. I'm not claiming that I know anything about Bill Gates.
Bill and Melinda do a lot of charity work.
They do.
And you know how I know that? I listen to NPR, and they are always mentioned.
Well, and then you know. The only reference I have is to the movie The Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Oh, yeah.
Which
I still haven't seen.
Michael Anthony Hall played him like a very, very bad guy.
I still need to see it.
He's kind of whiny and angry and he's super nerdy to Steve Jobs, cool guy. Like that movie, yeah, Steve Jobs is like, I do computers, but it's not because I'm a nerd, but because I'm just cool enough to do computers. And then, like, Bill Gates is like, I'm a hardworking man who uses my computer.
They do have a fascinating story.
It is.
Yeah.
The movie was not as fascinating as I wanted it to be. But
the trailer's amazing.
Yeah, and I remember it. And I think that's what it was. The trailer's too much of a buildup. I still need to watch that. I still want to watch that. It's really difficult to find that. Because it was a made-for-TV movie.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway.
Used Tears for Fears.
Yes.
In the trailer. See, that's a thread right there. Tears for Fears.
So they just need to make soundtracks more often.
Yeah, exactly. I just need to. So I'm gonna make a movie, and then with that movie, I'm just gonna use an entire Tears for Fears soundtrack, and it's probably gonna make. I can make a mediocre movie, but my trailer is going to be off the chain.
You know, every once in a while, there's those trailers that are so well edited that they're so much better than the movies.
Oh yeah,
all the time. That happens all the time. Like I kind of wish I could do that. That seems like a fun job to just watch a movie and then edit it for a trailer.
One of the ones that I think we need to use for our new segment of On Second Thought, and is because of that trailer, is Napoleon Dynamite.
Yes,
I have watched that before. I think I've watched it twice, so maybe mine's on third thought. But
I've only seen it once,
and I did not like it.
Mm-hmm.
But every funny moment. Is in the trailer.
Yeah. And yeah, when they give too much away in the trailer, it's too bad.
Well, if you watch, and they don't even give away a lot, it's just that they give away every funny moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you watch the trailer, that Napoleon Dynamite seems amazing, you watch it and you're just like, eh. At least that's just me.
Yeah. Well, we will absolutely watch that one again. That one's worth a second viewing to see if there's anything new there.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I think it's now it's like time for a break. What do you think?
I think so.
Yeah, I think now would be a good time. And we will absolutely come back and discuss our next movie.
That's right.
You're listening to We're a Little Behind.
We learned it the hard way. Wildland fire is a fact of life for us. The only real protection for your home and property is defensible space. Remove ladder fuels, brush, and trees that can take the fire right into your house. But cleaning up your landscape is a big job, and Cal North Forestry is up to the task. They are the professionals. Cal North Forestry. Give your home the best chance at survival. For a free estimate, call 209-9473. 209-9473.
Taxpayer advocates across California oppose Prop 10. John Kupal is president of the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association.
Prop 10 could create more than 500 rental boards full of unelected bureaucrats and allow them to impose government fees on all housing, plus control how much homeowners can charge to rent out their own home or even a single room.
Robert Gutierrez from California Taxpayers Association.
Prop 10 could cost state and local governments hundreds of millions of dollars. If this flawed plan gets challenged in court, Prop 10 puts taxpayers on the hook to defend it. Protect your wallet. Vote no on Prop 10.
Check the facts at Prop10Flaws.com. Paid for by No on Prop 10, a flawed initiative that will make the housing crisis worse. A coalition of housing advocates, renters, large and small businesses, taxpayer groups, and veterans. Committee major funding from Blackstone Property Partners LP, BREIT MF Holdings LLC, Blackstone Real Estate Partners 6-8 LP, and their holdings.
Every day we hear about the dysfunction and fighting in Washington, D.C. It's hard to know who to trust. That's why we need real local leaders, like our Congressman Doug LaMalfa. He's a farmer who understands our community. Doug LaMalfa isn't part of the establishment. He's one of us.
I'm Doug LaMalfa. The North State is my home and always will be. I work for you and put people above politics. I've worked to help our local veterans and the victims of the catastrophic fires, and I'm fighting to make sure everyone gets the health care they need and can afford, including those with pre-existing conditions. I'll always fight for our values and to make our community better. Jobs are coming back, and we passed one of the largest tax cuts in history for middle-income families. I'm fighting to make Washington work for you. Thanks for listening.
Real results for real people. That's our Congressman, Doug LaMalfa. He's one of us.
I'm Doug LaMalfa, and I approve this message.
Paid for and authorized by Doug LaMalfa Committee.
No one plans to visit the emergency room, but when life's accidents happen, you need to get treated, not seated. Shasta Regional Medical Center is located at 1100 Butte Street in downtown Reading. They have emergency room doctors and staff that guarantee you will be seen by a medical professional within 30 minutes of your arrival. Shasta Regional Medical Center believes in delivering patient-centered health care with compassion and respect for every patient and their family.
And now, back to our show.
Welcome back to We're a Little Behind. I'm Chris Gomez.
And I'm Jen Gomez.
So that is the song is tied into our, the next one we're talking about, which is...
The Box.
Which, that is The Boxer by Simon and Garfunkel. When you take out the lyrics and you just have the background track, it sounds a lot like Dust in the Wind.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. Absolutely, it does.
Yeah.
I well, like, at first I'm like, oh, you're playing the wrong song. That's Dust in the Wind.
Yeah, right? Wait, hold on. Wait, I'm going to go back. Wait, wait, wait. Hold on. So I'm gonna go. Did we just discover something? That is crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know what though? There's only so many notes, and there's only so many chords, and so this happens all the time.
Oh, fine. But that's super Dust in the Wind.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. Very much Dust in the Wind.
Which I'm pretty sure The Boxer was first, so yes. Kansas has some explaining to do.
Yes, they do. All right, so we're talking about The Box, which is a 2009 movie starring Cameron Diaz and James Marsden.
Now, we bought this DVD probably about 4 years ago when we went to Eureka we were looking for something to watch, and we never got around to watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, I liked it. You should watch it. You need to watch it. Oh, it's so good. And we just never got around to it. Never got around to it. So you said that we're watching it for the show. So I watched it. I got around to it.
And again, I remember it being better. But, okay, so the premise of the box, it's based on a article that appeared in a magazine in the 70s and then was subsequently made into a Twilight Zone episode.
So not one of the original Twilight Zones?
No.
So one of the newer, well, the probably the different incarnations of the Twilight Zone.
I'm not. No, it was in the first season of Twilight Zone. When did Twilight Zone come out?
I believe the early 1960s.
Oh. Well, then maybe, yes, it was like the updated one, because it was in the first season.
Okay.
And watching this movie, I absolutely understand that it would be better as a
Twilight Zone
as a 40-minute episode versus a two-hour feature film.
Okay, so this one starts out with Cameron Diaz and James Marsden's characters. They're married. She's a teacher. He works for NASA, mm-hmm. and they have a son.
Which, interesting, their characters are based on the director's real parents. His dad worked for NASA, and he worked on the same project that James Marsden's character works on, a camera for Mars. And his mom had a foot deformity, just like Cameron Diaz, and was a teacher. So the characters were based on real people.
Wow, I would hate to be his parents. Because I'm going to tell you what happens in this movie, and it's not fun.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's where the similarities end.
Okay.
I don't think this actually happened.
Well, obviously. I'm going to be like that meme that goes around. Well, obviously.
Obviously.
So they're working, and they get woke up in the middle at like 5 o'clock in the morning to a car taking off, and there's a cardboard box wrapped in brown paper on their doorstep. They take it in. They open it up because apparently people aren't worried about bombs at that time in the 70s. Sure. They open it up, and inside is a wooden box with a glass dome, and inside the glass dome is a big red button.
Mm-hmm.
And a note that says, I will meet you at 5 p.m. To discuss or something like that. And then he goes to work. She goes to work. She works at the school. There's a weird interaction with one of her students. In the fact that he wants to know why she limps, and so she takes off her shoe and shows the foot. And
she has no toes.
This kid is really weird, you know. And so then she gets home, and he's still at his job. And at 5 o'clock, Frank Langella's character shows up, and he's a man who has...
Which is really cool. The digital effects on his face are really cool because he's missing a big portion of the left side of his face. Mm-hmm. Like it's an early precursor to Two-Face in Dark Knight.
Right.
And for 2009, I think it's pretty good.
Well, actually, it's not a precursor because 2008 is when Two-Face was.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Wow. I thought that was a lot later. Okay. Still, it looked cool.
Okay.
Go
ahead. But yeah, actually, Two-Face I think actually looks better for a year sooner.
Yes, but it wasn't in the movie as much.
True.
This was throughout the entire movie, and he was moving around a lot.
True. So anyway, he shows up, and he says, all right, I have in here, in the box, you have two choices. One, if you push the button in the box somewhere, someone you don't know will die. And then you will get this briefcase filled with $1 million. You have 24 hours to decide. If you push the button within 24 hours, then I will be back tomorrow to take the box and give you $1 million. If you choose not to, I will take the box, it will be reprogrammed, and that will be the end of it. Well, in the 24 hours that follow, she loses funding for her class.
Mm-hmm. They take away the scholarship because she teaches at a private school, mm-hmm. and her son is a student there, and they take away the faculty discount, so they can't afford for her son to be there anymore.
Okay. So then... Her husband is not put through to the astronaut program,
mm-hmm.
so he doesn't get. He's not going to get the raise. He's not going to get anything, and so they realize that they're already underwater enough with their for like their bills and debts, and now they can't afford the son's tuition and all this. So they're thinking about it. So him being the engineering that guy that he is, he takes the box, he opens it up, and underneath there's nothing. So they think it. So he thinks it's a prank pulled by the wedding party for the wedding that they're going to be in, because they're like maid of honor or something like that,
mm-hmm.
and part of the bridal party. And he thinks it's just going to be a joke. Oh, well, who pushed it and who didn't? Ha, ha, ha. He opens up the box, and then and the bottom of it's empty. And so when it's getting close to the time of the 24 hours is up, she pushes the button. And then Frank Langella shows up, and he's like, you pushed the button. Here's your money. Thank you. I'm taking the box. And then James Marsden's character freaks out, and he's like, I don't want your money. And he's like, too bad. You pushed the button. That's the consequences. And he's like, so now I'll be reprogrammed and given to somebody else, and I assure you, they don't know you. Which, if you remember, the initial thing was, if you push the button somewhere, someone you don't know will die. Dun, dun, dun. Foreshadowing.
Foreshadowing.
They're giving it to somebody who they don't know, so obviously it means that their time is probably numbered.
Mm-hmm.
Although, that seems like a big plot point to give away in the middle of the movie, but okay.
Sure.
And then in the process, they try to figure out what's going on. And so, I mean, this all happens in the first, like, 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have a whole, like, hour and a half movie filled with all other things to make it way more crazy. And he says, okay, well, then they start trying to figure out who Franklin Jell's character is. And it turns out he's like, I have a lot of employees. And it's like this group of people who are, like, hive mind. They mm-hmm. all, and he, like, controls them because he was working on a NASA project.
No, he worked for the NSA.
Oh, the NSA, right.
And he was struck by lightning.
Right.
And he died.
Right.
And then he came back to life.
Right.
Saying that he had employers.
Yeah.
And so now he's testing humanity.
Right.
So the only way to make this stop is to have people stop pushing the button. And so really it's a story about how greedy humanity is.
Correct. But in the process, James Marsden goes to the library to try to get information, and he's accosted by the hive mind people, and they take him into this room where they say there's three portals. Two of them take you to, like,
to salvation.
No, one of them takes you to salvation.
Oh, sorry.
The other two
take you to eternal damnation.
Yeah. So he chooses the second one because creepy kid at the beginning of the movie who wanted to see his wife's foot was at the party as a waiter, and he showed him the two sign. So I think that's the reason why he chose two.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes through, and then it goes this weird, what's his name? The director, Stanley Kubrick, 30 seconds of Stanley Kubrick, lights flashing,
mm-hmm.
and he sees a glimpse of the afterlife. And for some reason, he's then teleported to his wife's, right above his wife's bed, and then all this water just floods the place.
Yeah, he's in, like, a cube of water.
Yeah.
And then the spell breaks, and he and the water fall onto the bed and completely flood the house with a lot more water than it looks like there was in that cube.
Yeah. And then they go to the wedding, and then their kid is kidnapped, and then they're at home, and then Franklin Jella shows up, and he's like, we have your son, and he is safe. However, we have made him blind and deaf. And they're like, what? And he's like, yes, that's what happens. But you have two choices. You can either live with your son being with his disabilities and deformed of being deaf and blind, never to hear your voice, blah, 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 and take the money that you have. Or here's a gun with one bullet. Now you can shoot your wife through the heart. If you do, then your son will be returned to normal. And that's the end of it.
And he will get the $1 million because you go to jail.
Yeah, so you'll go to jail, and the money that you have will be put into a trust for him when he turns 18. And so he's like, oh, and by the way, your son's locked in the upstairs bathroom. So he's there the whole time. So then he's there, and the kid's like, I can't hear you. I can't see you. Where am I? And he's like, if you can hear me, I'm outside the door. He's like, where is everybody? I'm like, obviously he can't hear you because he just said they made him blind and deaf because somehow they've got superpowers.
Yeah, this movie tries to make it seem like it's sci-fi, but then it doesn't really explain anything.
No.
It sets up all this stuff to where it feels like you will get a conclusion at the end.
Yeah.
And you get no conclusion.
Well, and so as they're trying to decide what to do, she's like, you need to shoot me in the heart. There's another person who has a box who's getting ready
another
to
couple.
Push it. Yeah, who they don't know who's getting ready to push the button.
Mm-hmm.
And so the cycle begins.
And so as soon as the wife pushes the button, that's when he pulls the trigger, killing Cameron Diaz, and then his son is fine. And he's put in the back of what looks like a police car and told, oh, well, you and your son will be fine. So it really leaves it ambiguous. Like, are they now part of the hive mind? Like, are they part of this thing? I don't get it.
I don't like it.
I don't understand why I liked it the first time.
And I'm like, I should have listened to myself and not watched this. But the Twilight Zone episode that it comes from sounds like a really interesting premise. So it has the same thing. It's a box that they say someone somewhere you don't know will die. And in so Twilight Zone episodes are 22 minutes. So mm-hmm. they're able to kind of squeeze that into a short story, which I think is probably the best way to do this.
Yeah.
And so in the process, they get the money, and then the husband is in an accident.
Yeah, so what happens after the wife pushes the button, the husband dies in a train accident, and she receives money in the form of a no-fault insurance payout. Mm-hmm. So she gets the money that way. So it's not just here's a suitcase full of money. It's a you get an insurance payout. So she complained that it was supposed to be someone she didn't know, to which she's told, you never really knew your husband.
Dun-dun-dun! And that right there seems like a very cool story.
Right. It has a twist.
Yeah.
There's a twist.
And in this movie,
it's a whole lot. It's got the same problem as Donnie Darko. It's a lot of build up and then no payoff.
Yeah, it's just a lot. And then it's just a lot of weird for being weird.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I remember liking it before. On second thought, not so much.
The hive mind thing and the way Frank Langella's character does everything reminds me a lot of V, the TV show V.
Oh, yeah.
The latest incarnation that was mm-hmm. about 6 years ago or mm-hmm. so. It's within the last 10 years.
Yeah.
With Marina Baccarin. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it reminds me of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was weird, and it didn't explain things, and it was just frustrating.
Yeah.
Just frustrating.
So that one right there is our take on The Box.
So our third movie that we're going to be talking about today, which falls along the same lines of the mystery thriller thing, is a lot better movie.
Yeah.
And we liked this one. So.
And actually, this one ties into that one, not in storyline, but with one particular word. And you'll know what it is when we come back.
That's right.
So we are going to take a break because you are listening to We're a Little Behind.
Paid for by Brian Daly for Assembly, 2018.
Since going to the state legislature in Sacramento, Brian Daly has kept his promise to the people of Northern California. Brian's focused his time and energy on creating jobs while voting against regulations and taxes. Brian has worked across party lines to save our rural hospitals, skilled nursing facilities, and biomass plants and programs that actually produce jobs for young people. Brian even hosted over 100 legislators to the North State to educate them on our rural way of life. And as a testament to Brian's integrity and work ethic, Brian was elected by his peers to be minority leader in the legislature. But there's still much to do, and problems still need solving. So let's re-elect Brian Daly to the State Assembly on November 6th.
Yeah, he'll stop. I have the right-of-way. Or really. Alan Gordon here, Coachmaster Collision Repair. Don't count on it. He or she might be texting, changing the station on the radio, or breaking up a fight in the back seat. Don't take that chance. Lives are at stake. Distracted driving is a danger to us all. You can be proactive in preventing an accident. There's not much you can do when you're sitting in your car and they back into your door. If this happens to you, come see us. We're located at the south end of East Side Road just before Gervin. With your claim number, we can handle your entire claim process. Our quality repairs and friendly service will have you recommending Coachmaster to all your friends and family. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Coachmaster Collision Repair continues to be the leader in the North State for advanced technology in the collision repair industry, serving the Reading community since 1969. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
The average adult has issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
And now, back to our show.
Welcome back to We're a Little Behind. I'm Chris Gomez.
I'm Jen Gomez.
And that song is Seven Wonders.
Oh, why did you play that song?
Because it the next movie ties into the last movie, The Box, Seven Wonders.
Mm-hmm.
And before I tell you what the movie is, that song kind of starts out sounding a lot like The Police, Black Hole Sun, not Black Hole Sun, Spirits in the Material World.
So all songs sound like other songs today.
Today it is, yeah, a lot. Yes, absolutely. But the movie that we're talking about...
can be summed up in one question.
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
Come on, what's in the box?
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
So of course we are talking about Seven.
Seven, the movie
the
Seven.
The movie Seven. 1995, Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman.
This was an on second thought for me. I got to watch it. For the second time, and I really liked it the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it again. I will say that it's a slow burn movie, though.
It is, yeah.
It takes a while to get through, because it's like 2 hours and 6 minutes, and it feels long.
It feels long. This is a David Fincher movie, and I didn't really realize that until we were watching the credits. I'm like, oh, I know that guy. So he does a lot of kind of very cerebral movies. So, I mean, he did Fight Club. And the first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club, which, by the way, I am so impressed with mankind. Like, I have some of my faith in humanity restored in the fact that I did not see Fight Club until, like, within the last 10 years. And that movie came out in 99. So I saw it pretty late, and I did not know the ending.
And you know what? We're not going to ruin it now.
We're not, because you don't talk about Fight Club except to say, I can't believe I didn't know how that movie ended.
Right?
Like, no one spoiled it, ever.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't get spoiled.
Yeah, next year's the 20th anniversary, and I mean, there's still a lot of people who if they haven't seen it, don't know how it ends.
Yeah. People take that mantra seriously. The first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club, which is a great movie. So if you haven't seen it, watch it. It's great. But David Fincher also did Gone Girl, which I absolutely loved, that came out a few years ago. But, so Seven, if you haven't seen it, why? Why have you not seen this movie? So, Brad Pitt is an up-and-coming young new detective to Morgan Freeman's, you know, this is my last job before retirement detective.
He's gone full Murtaugh.
He really has. And they are hunting a serial killer who is killing people, by the seven deadly sins.
Uh-huh.
And so each one of his victims is a perpetrator of said sin, and so he kills them in very, very gruesome ways. And what's really interesting is that the killer, he's just known as John Doe, and that's his character name, is John Doe. And he is one of the most twisted, just worst serial killers in cinematic history, yet you never see him do anything.
Yeah.
You only see the result, which is very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, you discover these scenes as the detectives do. And it's a very it's a pretty grotesque movie.
Oh yeah, there's
like
the
special effects in it and just the makeup and the practical effects.
Yeah, the practical effects are amazing.
Good.
Yeah.
They are very good.
Yeah. But there's a lot of people who are up for this movie who turned it down.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot.
Oh yeah.
So like you said, you have Brad Pitt, you have Morgan Freeman, and the killer is Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey, who you do not see until almost like with only the last 30 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
Because he's when they catch him, and they don't really catch him. He kind of walks into the police station and says, "I'm here." But
did you say the police station?
Police.
Oh, okay. He walks into the police station? I'm like, what?
The police station.
You caught the bad guy. At triangle, square, square, X, square, triangle, circle.
No, but what's really cool is that, so they didn't reveal the fact that he was in this movie. It was not advertised as a Kevin Spacey movie. And so he didn't have to do any publicity. He didn't have to go to any junkets for it. He didn't have to talk about it. He didn't have to do interviews. Because it was a complete surprise. He's not even in the opening credits. And it, his name is, he's listed a couple of times in the end credits. And actually, he's the first one. He gets the whole screen to himself. It says Kevin Spacey, John Doe. And then the credits roll. And then he gets crediting again in the actual credits. But, yeah, it was a complete secret that he was in it. And he liked it that way.
Yeah. Well, and this was after The Usual Suspects.
I think so. When did The Usual Suspects come out?
I thought The Usual Suspects was 94, but it could have been 95. But I still think it was right before.
Yeah, because this came out in 95. And what David Fincher told Brad Pitt is that this will not be the movie you're known for, but it will be a movie you're proud of.
I'd agree that totally, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, Usual Suspects was 95 as well.
Okay.
So they came out the same year. Which is another great, great movie. Oh, my gosh.
Usual Suspects is easily my favorite Kevin Spacey movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, people, it's not really a discussion I have to have. Like, that's tough. Like, what? Somebody asks you, what's your favorite Tom Hanks movie? You're going to be there a while.
You're going to be there a while, yeah.
You ask me what my favorite Kevin Spacey movie is, Usual Suspects.
It's not Mine Lives?
Don't even. I didn't see that movie. For a
reason. I don't think anyone saw that movie.
More people than should have seen that movie.
Anyway, so this movie was Brad Pitt's follow-up to Legends of the Fall.
This was the follow-up to that?
Yes. And one of the reasons he wanted to do it was that it's real and gritty, and he wanted to kind of shed that cheese of Legends of the Fall. He also does not appear shirtless in this movie because he's like, I don't want to do that anymore. I did that in the last movie, not in this one.
Except for when he's shaving his chest, but even then he has a shirt on.
He has a shirt on, yeah. Because they have to shave, him and Morgan have to shave their chest so they can wear wires. But it's not, I mean, it's Morgan Freeman and Brad Pitt standing in a police bathroom with little patches of shaving cream and down the middle of their chest. It's not really a sex symbol scene.
But you gotta love the Morgan Freeman deliveries of everything.
Oh yeah, this is a very Morgan Freeman heavy delivery because he's, he does a lot of research into the Seven Deadly Sins and reading all these classics, which is really funny because it shows him going to the library and getting out all these really old classic books and doing research and reading everything.
Canterbury Tales and all this.
And then it shows Brad Pitt's character getting cliff notes of Canterbury Tales.
Yeah. And
old school versus new school.
Yeah, and
I'm sure he would have been Googling it if that had been an option.
But like, there's certain ones. This is definitely. I feel that this is probably one of the few Morgan Freeman movies that is super dark and depressing because he doesn't really have very many moments of levity in this movie.
Not at all. No.
The shaving of the chest is the only time I think he laughs.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, because you know, you got the Morgan Freeman laugh in almost everything. I mean, even if you're even the Shawshank Redemption or, you know, Driving Miss Daisy, there's usually some sort of levity. Even in the Dark Knight movies, there's some sort of levity always in his.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's classy levity, not farcical levity.
Right. Yeah, and, but no, this is a heavy movie.
Yeah.
It's a heavy movie, but it's good. It's very well written, and the end is unexpected.
I think we have to kind of say what the ending is.
We're gonna spoil it again. Came out in 95, So yeah. Statute of limitations. If you haven't seen it and you don't want to know, again, this is your warning.
Yep.
Spoilers ahead.
Yeah. So.
So they get through five of the sins.
Yep.
And there's still two left.
And so Kevin Spacey turns himself in.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, there's still two more. I will tell you where they are, but and I'll fully confess, but I'm only going to take you two.
Morgan and Brad.
Right. And so they're driving him, and he's having a conversation about everything. And blah, 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 blah. And they get there to this middle of nowhere. They have a police helicopter following to make sure it's not an ambush. And so they get to
with John C. McGinley, the doctor from Scrubs, which was amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, continue.
But you don't really see his face even much. Like,
no, you
don't. It's always obstructed. It's always moving. And yeah.
But it's him. His name is California.
Nice. So they get to this middle of nowhere area where there's a trailer, and supposedly it's his or something. I don't know. And he's like, they're like, so where is it? He's like, you'll see. He's all, what time is it? And Morgan Freeman's like, why do you want to know? And he's like, I'm curious. I would just like to know what time it is. And he's like, it is 7:01. Oh, it will be here soon. And you're like, uh-oh. So Brad and Kevin Spacey go for this little walk towards the trailer because he's like, I need to know something. He's like, yeah, I'll show you. And then all of a sudden this van starts just speeding down this dirt road. So Morgan Freeman goes and hops in his car to go cut him off at the pass to get to
make sure he doesn't actually get to them, because who knows what's going to happen.
Right. And as it turns out, it's a courier van.
Yeah, delivery
courier
truck.
Van. And he's like, I'm supposed to meet Brad's character's name, Mike
Mills.
Mills. It's something else, Mills, right?
Mills.
Yeah, Mills. I have a delivery, and he's like, well, put it down, and yeah, blah, blah. And he's like, I was supposed to be here at 7. I was given $400 to make sure that I deliver this package to Mills at 7 o'clock, and I'm trying not to run late. And so... it's a box, kind of like the box from the box.
Box from the box, yeah.
It's a cardboard box.
Mm-hmm.
And so he tells the courier to run, and he radios back to, hey, pick up this guy. I want to make sure there's nothing fishy about it. And he opens the box, and he gives one of the more classic Morgan Freeman stunned, disgusted looks.
Yeah, and he backs away real quick, and,
yeah, and
then he starts running towards Mills and
telling him to get away from
John
him.
Doe.
He's not. Yeah, John Doe is in control. John Doe is getting away from him, and he's like, and so he's like, oh, detective, you thought that you were in control, but honestly, this blah blah blah, and he's like, shut up, and he's like, oh, I wish nothing but the best for you and your beautiful wife, and he calls her by his name, which is Gwyneth Paltrow.
Tracy.
And he's like, what'd you say your name? Shut up. And then Morgan Freeman shows up, runs to him. He's like, get away from him. And he's all, what was in the box? What's in the box? And as it turns out, he's like, John Doe's like, I met your wife and then I cut off her head, and so it's in the box.
Mm-hmm.
You never see it.
Right, because he was envious of Mills' life, the home life, the wife, the pregnant wife, and Mills didn't know she was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, he didn't know, because obviously he's enraged now.
Because Tracy told Morgan Freeman's character.
But Morgan said, don't tell Mills.
Right, because he's got too many things going on, and she didn't know whether she wanted to keep the baby, and it was that. But so he's like, now I'm going to make you vengeance. I'm going to make
wrath.
You wrath. Yeah. Well, he said both.
Oh, okay.
He said, I'm going to make you vengeance. I'm making you wrath. Because, so she was...
Envy.
And, yeah, he was envy.
Yeah, so he killed her and said that it was because of his envy for them.
Right.
And then he planned it so that Mills would then kill him, John Doe, as wrath.
Wrath.
So he became his own last victim.
The last two of the deadly sins.
Mm-hmm.
And he does. And that's kind of where the movie ends.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a fan theory about this, because you never see her head in the box.
Right. You just see Morgan Freeman's reaction to the box.
Mm-hmm.
You never see the box.
You never see it. And you never see anyone else see it. you just see him say that the head's in the box, and then Brad Pitt shoots him repeatedly, and then...
And Morgan also never says that it's in the box.
Right.
This is all just John Doe saying it.
So the theory is that that Morgan Freeman's character's last case was this, and he was the one killing everybody.
Yeah, I don't really like that theory.
But it holds some water in the fact that he could have convinced a very mentally unstable Kevin Spacey, John Doe, to say that he was this, sort of like in The Dark Knight, mm-hmm. where Joker preys on the people who have mental instabilities to do bad things because he's convinced them.
True.
So basically, her head may not have been in the box. He was just saying that it was to convince Mills to kill John Doe.
Mm-hmm.
And he was actually orchestrating the entire thing.
I mean, it's possible, but...
Because he finds a lot of the clues that are not there, because he's the good detective.
Right. I don't know, but I feel like you get to see him discover these things, and you see him spend a lot of time by himself researching these things, and, like, some of them had
been... But he could have been researching these things to commit them correctly.
But, like, one of them, his torture started a year in advance by the time they found him, the sloth. And so
which is a crazy scene.
Really is. So why would you go through all the trouble of doing all this extra research if you were already into it? And I don't know. I mean I see why people would think that. I personally just don't subscribe.
Okay.
But it's a very good movie.
Yeah. No, this is the good one of the three that we watched.
Yes.
So yeah, absolutely. Now that brings us down to towards the end of our show. We've got about 3 minutes left. So we've got Halloween ready to go, right?
We do. We are. Yeah, we're working on catching up on the Halloween movies. Lauren DeAngelis is going to join us for a Halloween discussion on the day before Halloween.
Yes.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
And,
this is Halloween. This is Halloween.
And we definitely have that going. I'm not sure. Do we decide what we're going to do for the weeks in between?
Nope. We'll figure something out.
We're not doing the whole paint in the corner thing again?
Nope. Not at all. But in the meantime, please check out our website at gomezcast.com and catch up on all our past episodes on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, wherever you listen to podcasts. We are there. And also follow us on Facebook. Give us a like.
Mm-hmm.
And follow Walby around in his travels.
Yeah. And in our latest, now it's the new fall season, we're trying to fit in old stuff with new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So one of them that we're still working on is Riverdale. We're about 8 episodes into the first season.
Which we're loving. So if you haven't watched Riverdale, give it a shot. It's
an
awesome show.
We said we were going to try to give as many updates at least that we can, because we had to update the last one.
Mm-hmm.
And but at that point, we're only 3 episodes in. We're now 8.
Oh, we are smoking through them.
Sort of.
But they're very good. I really wish we could just go home and watch them more.
This season of American Horror Story is actually turned out to be one of the better ones.
It is. It's very good. Much, much better than Cult.
Ugh.
The Cult season just wasn't doing it for us. Yeah. But this current season, Apocalypse, is very good.
Yeah. And we actually are getting some time back because now that the play that I was directing is over, it ended this last weekend.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations on a successful run.
Thank you. Now we get some evenings back.
A little bit.
Not a lot, some. But yeah, it should be pretty good. And then right now with work, I'm dealing with political.
Mm-hmm.
Political season. The election just needs to be...
We'll
come
get there.
And gone.
We'll get there.
I am done with that. But I can't think of anything else. We're doing, what are we doing this weekend? We're doing the barbecue thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in Reading and you're looking for something to do.
River Commons is having their grill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'll be judging some tri-tip and macaroni.
Mac and cheese.
Yeah. So
last year it was beans. This year it's mac and cheese.
Yeah. So that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing this weekend, and then we've got trivia on Wednesday. So it's just we're going back to Riverfront to watch the play that they're currently doing in between shows.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Riverfront's being used to for another play called Talking With, So if you're looking for something to do over this weekend and you want to see a play that's at Riverfront, but it's not necessarily Riverfront production, Talking With is that happening.
Yeah, so. It's going to be in production this weekend. And so through Saturday the 20th. So check it out.
Yep. Well, that's it. That's our show. Have a good night. You've been listening to We're a Little Behind.
Good night.
The news is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Redding by Tobacco and Brew. Come see their newly remodeled store at 2143 Hilltop Drive in Redding. Tobacco and Brew, open 7 days a week.